very special.
Hello, everyone. I'm Michelle. I'm an alcoholic, and I'd like to thank Billy for asking me to come. And I thank all of y'all for being here to listen to somebody who doesn't have butterflies in her belly. She's got elephants in her belly. My sobriety date is December 5th, 2010. I have a sponsor who also has a sponsor. I meet with my sponsor regularly. I also meet with my sponsorship group, a bunch of us, about 50 or so of us in the trade that meet once a month, which is how we get that fellowship thing going, that network going, which has really helped me out in this program. A little background information on me. I was born in 1959 in Richmond, Virginia, to a Navy family. We traveled a lot. I'm going to take my glasses off. This way I don't have to see y'all looking at me. Now you're all blurry. Now it's all good. So we traveled a lot when I was young. And, of course, Vietnam was going on. So we ended up out in Washington State after three or four states before that. But we ended up in Washington State, and my father was on one of the aircraft carriers, and he did three tours in Vietnam. While he was gone, my mother having three children, we had babysitters. I don't recall my mother working, but being 3 and 4 years old, I'm not sure why my mother wasn't around. All I knew is that we had babysitters on an inconsistent basis. One of the babysitters wasn't very nice, let's put it that way. So I learned at a young age not to trust a babysitter. I told my mother what had happened, and all I know is that the babysitter showed up again. So therefore, I no longer trusted my mother. So that plays in my whole long line of not being able to trust women. I wanted to stay with my father when my parents divorced when I was six. And that didn't happen. I stayed with my mother. So we had to move across country from Washington State to Philadelphia. And that's where my grandmother was living at the time. So my mother's family's all from Richmond, but my grandmother married. This was her third husband. She ended up outliving three husbands. But he was working in Philadelphia, and so we moved there, and that's where I went to school. And that's why I have this accent, this funny accent. Things weren't well there. My relationship with my mother was not very good. And living with my grandparents on the wrong side of the tracks, I didn't have any friends because they didn't want to hang out with the girl from the wrong side of the tracks. I never fit in. I used to hang out under the bridge trying to think of ways to end my life, what it would be like. Not serious, but just what it would be like. But this is how it leads into the depression and all that kind of stuff that alcohol fixes, at least for a while. I got married at the age of 15, not because I was in love, but to get out of the house. But I married a military guy, Marine. I went to Cherry Point, North Carolina, got on the Marine Corps base. Doesn't matter how old you are, you can drink. I went to the NCO club, and that was my first experience with alcohol. I remember the way it tasted, the way it made me feel, all that stuff, and it was really good. I didn't drink alcoholically or anything like that, nothing spectacular, but it was in that notebook in my mind. I think I just kept that for safekeeping. That marriage didn't last very long. It was very abusive. You ever notice that it seems like no matter what goes on in your life, that's what normal to you is, that's what you attract. That's what I did. I attracted all the negativity. I thought that was normal. That's the way normal people live. And that's how my life was going to be for the rest of my life. I was got married at 15, got back home at 16. When I got back home, my mother got me a fake ID and started taking me to bars with her. You learn real quick. You take somebody young into a bar. You put a few drinks in them. You start introducing them to all the menfolk, and the menfolk like that. I learned that's how you get attention. In retrospect, I think I was looking for that dad that I wanted and didn't have. But I made friends with a lot of guys. I was not sleeping around. I had one of my mother's friends who used to let me come and stay at his apartment. He had kids about my age. Excuse me. And let me come and stay at his apartment. And I went there, and one of the really bad weekends with my mother, I went into his medicine cabinet and I took 83 Valium. And unbeknownst to me that night, because I cannot remember any of it, thank God, he raped me. I found out when I woke up in a locked ward 2 weeks later that I was pregnant. Personal beliefs, I did not believe in abortion, so I kept that baby. I believe that God put that baby in my life, that I had something that loved me that nobody could take away. So, that being said, I'm going to fast forward because that man disappeared. He admitted to what he did, and then he just disappeared. I ended up finding a man, getting married. Stayed married for 14 years. It was another abusive relationship. No drinking going on. But I was like a prisoner. I wasn't allowed to drive. I wasn't allowed to talk to my family, who had since moved away and moved back to Richmond. So I'm up in Philadelphia without my family support. He would call me every 20 minutes on the phone. You know, who are you talking to? Get off the phone. He'd have the operator say it's an emergency call. I mean, that's how controlling this man was. So in 1988, after one really bad beating, I thought I was going to die. I left because I figured if I don't, then I'm going to die. At this point, I had two kids. And I left. And once I get rid of him, it's like the world opened up. I was legal to go in bars. I got my first real job. I was making my own money, all that type stuff. So that's when I got into, you know, I didn't have all that adolescence drinking and party stuff going on. I did that in my 20s because I made up for it. I didn't have that stuff early on. So all it was partying and all that stuff. I wasn't drinking morning, noon, and night. But when I partied hard. But I was blackout drinking even then. There are several times that I cannot tell you how I made it home. I was told that I crawled at one point, a block and a half. I crawled on my hands and knees to get home. Nobody would put me in their car because I was getting sick. You know, it's one of those where I had the money, so I'd go to the bar and all those fancy drinks on those fancy menus, I want one of each. Keep them coming, I want one of each. And that's what I did. I want to experience everything because that's what grown-ups do. And this is what real life is all about. I got into another bad relationship and another bad one and another bad one. And I finally found another one but he drank like I did. And he did crazy things like I did. And we got married. And, Yeah, and that didn't work out so well. But in 1986, I'm going to backtrack. I just want to let y'all know, I'm not one of these can do. the alphabeticals, ABCs, the chronological thing, I kind of jump a little bit as I remember what's going on or things that I should have said and forgot to say and comes to my mind. In 1986, and this is before I was really doing any of the drinking, my brother had a severe accident. A drunk driver did it to him, threw him out of the flatbed of a pickup truck doing 50 miles an hour, face first into a medium strip. You may as well say I lost my brother in that accident, but his body was still here. So I didn't have the same brother mentally, but physically, like I said, his body was still here, and that's how we identified him at the hospital, because of a tattoo on his arm, because you couldn't. It's like something out of a horror film. He lived for 22 years, and family took care of him for 22 years. He did everything that they said he wasn't going to be able to do, but he had no short-term memory. It's his memories from back, he only remembered from like 9 years old and before that. So I was one, I'm going to fast forward now, that the man that I was married to, the alcoholic, the last one, I've had four marriages. This is my number four for me. And Lord willing, crick doesn't rise, this is the last one I'm going to have. I always gave up my life no matter where I was when my family needed me, my mother, my grandmother, my brother. I get a call, something is going on. My brother had a trach in his neck that needed to be cared for. So I was living, I never lived anywhere more than 2 years. Everywhere I'm, you know, every 2 years or even less, I was moving around from place, whether it's work, and this had nothing to do with my father and nothing to do with the Navy. I was living in Georgia at this time, and my mother was going in for cancer surgery. I came home to take care of my brother because my grandmother couldn't. While I was doing that, my grandmother found out she had cancer, so then she had to go in for cancer surgery. So I'm caring for my mother and my brother, and then my grandmother got out. My mother ended up back in the hospital. My grandmother died. I called my husband to tell him that my grandmother died, and his girlfriend answered the phone. So I lost my grandmother, who basically raised me, the closest thing, closer than a mother, because I don't know what a real mother's supposed to be. To me, it was even closer, closer than a sister, closer than anything. And due to that babysitter, who was bad with me and my brother, that threw a rift in between me and my brother. So my brother and I have never had a relationship due to that. People don't realize what they do to kids, but kids don't forget. And kids end up with things. And that comes down to drinking, too, because my kids suffered because of my drinking. I have one that I have no idea where he's at right now. No clue. I have another one that's one of us. He's just not in the program. We're doing the best we can with him, but I had to place him in God's hand. My husband and I do live this life. I'm going to fast forward some. I have been in about every institution there is in Richmond area and Roanoke. I have tried to commit suicide 6 times. I've been in detox. I think it was only in detox 2. All the other times, 6 specific times, I was in for attempted suicide. I've been on life support 2. I was serious enough that I wrote, "Do not resuscitate," on my body in permanent ink marker. That's what alcohol did for me, because all those fun and those games and those great alcoholic things, I mean, adult things that you're supposed to be able to do, didn't work so much for me. All that pain and all that misery, all I kept doing was, I had this sign that said, you know, it was like flashing lights. It was like a beacon. And it kept finding, I was a victim over and over and over again. I'm here to tell you right now, I'm no longer a victim. I'm a survivor. And as my grand sponsor called me, she said, I'm a thriver. I am no longer a victim of anything. And that's due to this program. The last time I attempted suicide, and I used alcohol as a tool. I didn't come into this program because I needed to put the alcohol down. I needed this program so I didn't pick it up. I used it as a tool. I could stop drinking with no problem and stay stopped for a year and a half, 2 years, whatever. And that wasn't the issue. But when all these problems and all these anxieties, all this pain came up, that was my go-to. The alcohol was my go-to, and it stopped working. And it's like that jumping off point that Bill talks about. I couldn't live with it and live without it. I drank until I passed out. I didn't drink every single day. When I did stop for good, I never had the DTs or any of that stuff. I met my husband while I was still drinking. I went fishing. I met him on plentyoffish.com. And I reeled him in. I told him the very first time I met him, he was a keeper. And I really do love to fish. So I told him he was a keeper, and I was going to keep him. We've been together ever since. But I'll be honest with you, it still blows my mind that he is with me. He said that he saw in me the reason why I was drinking. My mother died in 2003. I gave up my life. I was living in West Palm Beach, Florida at that time. And I moved back to Richmond to care for my brother full time. And I cared for him until he died in 2007, 24/7. My husband and I got married in 2006. So if you do the math, we got married and we weren't living together until 2007. We were together for 2 years before we ever lived together. He was caring for his folks. I was caring for my brother. And when my brother died, I moved into his folks' house, and I started caring for his folks 24/7. Steve was in the program. Steve, my husband's got 31 years in this program. I think that if he wasn't in this program so long, I don't think he would have put up with me and my antics, because he met me in the full throes of alcoholism. Crazy behavior. I might not have been drinking every day, but all the stupid, crazy alcoholic behavior was all there. The jealousy for no reason, getting mad over no reason, all that type stuff. I put him through a lot. But anyway, I moved. He had a life in AA. He had a work life. All I did was care for his folks. I didn't go anywhere. I didn't do anything. I had problems with his sisters. I'm not going to go into that long, drawn-out deal, but I had had enough, and I figured I was never going to have a life. I was busy taking care of everybody, never took care of me. So that was the last time, November 24th, my birthday, Thanksgiving Day, 2010, was the last time I had a drink. I went and bought a box of wine, because an alcoholic never buys a bottle of wine. You buy a box to give me enough nerve to commit suicide. And I didn't know whether I was going to take pills or I was going to run out on Highway 360 in front of the Mack truck. It was going to be one or the other, but I wasn't sure which. And I figured, well, I'll try the pills. If the pills don't work, then I'll try the truck. Take the soft way out first. Less messy. Women don't like to be messy. So, but my husband came home after being at an alkathon and knew that I had been drinking and asked me what I had done. I don't remember if he saw that I had taken the pills or if he asked me or whatever, because it's pretty much kind of a blur. All I know is I woke up November 25th in Tucker's. And I don't think I was in the detox unit. I think I was in the padded room again. And when I woke up, I was by myself. And I said, okay, God, you won't let me go. You've got a plan that I don't have. You won't let me pick and choose when I live and when I die. Whatever you want me to do, I'm going to do. I gave up and I gave myself over right then and there. And when I got out, I told Steve, I said, I'm going to try this AA thing. And I'm going to give it 100%. Now, I'm not going to tell you that I've never tried AA before. And because I had, and I wasn't ready. After a previous attempt at suicide, I had a couple of people 12-step me up at the hospital. And I wanted to go into rehab, and the rehab my insurance wouldn't let me go because there was no history. Didn't make sense to me, but you had to have a history of being in the hospital for alcoholism, not suicide, alcoholism. So I had to make sure that I got into the detox center again, which I did. So they 12-stepped me, and when I got out, I went back out so that I could go. And the woman that took me to a meeting, now, I was kind of drunk, but not I'm not going to say I was drunk. I was at that buzz. I had a nice buzz going. I say nice, but it really wasn't very nice when you're boo-hooing all over the place. It's not real nice, but I wasn't in a blackout or anything. I remember every bit of it. And she says, she takes me into the room and says, hey, we got a wet one here. Everybody turned and looked at me. I decided I didn't want anything to do with AA. I wanted nothing to do at all. If this is the way y'all treat people, I want anything to do with you. It took me 4 years before I came in, but I knew I wasn't ready because I hadn't turned myself over to God. And that's what I had to do in order to come into this program. Once I got in, I got a sponsor right away. I got a home group right away. I got a job in the home group. I got a position at district. I got busy. I'm sponsoring women. I help women even when I don't sponsor them. The book does not tell me that I need to be a sponsor to help somebody. It says that I need to help another alcoholic. So I have taken women through the fourth and fifth step that I do not sponsor. They trust me. And I think that's what is needed in this program. I think that whole thing about sponsorship, you know, in Michelle's perfect world, all we are is a guide. We're not a teacher. There's no pass or fail. Bless you. There's no pass or fail. There's no anything. There's no right and wrong. It's all here in the 164 pages. And I had a hard time with sponsors. I had a really good sponsor, but then she ran out of time. And she got too busy and didn't have time for me. And she wanted to sponsor me over the phone. I wasn't even through all the steps yet. That wasn't working for me, but I didn't give up. I had another sponsor who picked up where the last one did, and she got me through the steps. We got through the traditions and the concepts. And that was wonderful. But then she didn't have time anymore due to her personal reasons. I didn't give up. I still kept looking for a sponsor. I had one sponsor who doesn't know how to give me answers when I come to her about things. She says, I'll just take it to a meeting. If two or more people say the same thing, that's probably what you need to do. And I'm like, that doesn't work for me. What if they tell me, oh, I'd kill myself if I were you. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Am I supposed to do that? You know, I don't believe that I need to bring my personal intimate details into an open meeting. You know, that's what a sponsor is for. That's what that mentor, that guide is for, to help guide me. Because sometimes, even today, there are things that happen that I need to put my glasses on so I can see the clock. Now I can see it. all you nice people. And now I forget what I was saying. Sponsorship. Yes. Anyway, I really did. I got an air pocket up there in my brain. I never gave up. I really never gave up. I knew that this thing worked, and I wasn't going to stop. So whether I had a sponsor or not, I was just going to keep on going. I go to all the conferences. I go to the, like, the Unity Days, all those type things. I just got the TB test. I'm going to be taking meetings to the treatment center. All the time. I have to be within that circle and that triangle. I have to be there. Because if I don't, I'm going to end up drinking again. And for me, drinking is sure death. I can go back out again with no problems. I'll guarantee you I don't have another in. And I have to keep that first and foremost in my mind. I have to do that first step every single day and remind myself when I see those beautiful glasses and that warm brandy on the TV commercials, that's going to kill me. It's tempting. It's romancing it. Those ladies in the bathtubs with those fancy glasses of wine and... You can't even watch the, what is it, the Today Show, Kathy Lee and Hoda. They got the wine glasses. You know, it's early in the morning, and they've got the wine glasses going. It's like, what message are you putting out there to people that this is okay, 9 o'clock in the morning to be drinking? But only an alcoholic, I think, would think like that. I don't know, but I don't think normal people think about that type of stuff. I think that's it. I want to thank all of y'all for listening to me.